Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco 49ers Insider, Matt Mayoko.
On this edition of the 49ers Insider Podcast, we catch up with Vernon Davis, the 49ers all-time leader in receptions and yards from the tight end position. Davis twice had seasons with 13 touchdown receptions, and he ranks fourth all-time on the franchise's receiving touchdowns list behind only Jerry Rice, Terrell Owens, and Gene Washington. Vernon is in his second season with his hometown team, and this weekend the 49ers travel to Washington and will face Davis and his teammates. Davis will talk about his upbringing in D.C. and his years with the 49ers, including this famous Mike Singletary rant that was directed at him.
Vernon, it was something that I told everybody at the very beginning of the week. I will not tolerate players that think it's about them when it's about the team. I would rather play with 10 people and just get penalized all the way until we got to do something else, rather than play with 11 when I know that right now that person is not sold out to be a part of this team. It is more about them than it is about the team. I cannot play with them, cannot win with them, cannot coach with them, can't do it. I want winners. I want people that want to win.
How Vernon Davis responded to those Mike Singletary words would define his NFL career, which is now in its 12th season. And stay tuned after my interview with Vernon Davis, as former 49ers quarterback Jeff Garcia, now an analyst with NBC Sports Bay Area, looks back at last week's 49ers loss in Indianapolis, and he also looks ahead to this week's game at Washington. But right now, it's Vernon Davis coming up on the 49ers Insider Podcast. Hey, Vernon, how you doing?
Hey, buddy, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. So what's it been like for you to be back in your hometown playing for the Redskins?
It's been nothing but amazing. It's been great. I enjoyed my time in San Francisco. I thought that was awesome, but this is also an awesome experience. Wouldn't trade it for anything.
Growing up in D.C. like you did, tell me about your upbringing and, the neighborhood you lived in Petworth.
Well, when I was growing up in D.C., I mean, it was totally different. Right now, there's been a lot of gentrification. But back then, it was D.C. was tough. It was tough. There was a lot of violence going on growing up in the area I grew up in. It was... I'm not going to say it was the ghetto, but it was a tough upbringing. I grew up in a household with 6 siblings raised by my grandparents, and had a lot of negative influences around me at the time. So I had to make wise choices, and great thing I had my grandmother around to help me take the right path rather than the wrong one. So. That worked in my favor.
Does your grandmother still live in the same neighborhood?
Yes, she still lives in the same neighborhood, and her house is shot up in value tremendously.
that's great. So at the time when you came to the 49ers as the number 6 overall pick in 2006, like you said, there were probably bad influences in your neighborhood. There were probably some good influences too. But how was it that, did moving cross country, was that a good thing for you to get away from D.C. at that point?
Well, I always wanted to move. I always wanted to go somewhere else. I told myself that I stayed home for college. And this, I had a game plan. My goal was to stay home for college. And then once I got drafted, I'll go somewhere else. So I always knew, I had faith that I was going to get drafted and I was going to be somewhere else. And it so happened that I ended up going clean across country. And it was a great experience. I was ready for it.
So when you talk about some of the rough experiences growing up, I mean, did you, you witness violence, drugs, all that stuff?
Oh, yeah, I witnessed it all. I mean, all of it, you name it.
So your grandmother, is she the one that you kind of credit for keeping you on the straight and narrow and seeing to it that, that you had the opportunity to get out of that kind of environment?
Yes, yes. I feel like she was the main, resource that I had to stay on the straight and narrow, because mostly because of the love that she showed. You know, her love, the love was always there. You didn't want to, I didn't want to hurt her. I didn't want to do anything to make her feel bad. I just wanted to put a smile on her face, and I wanted to help her because I knew how much she was, you know, she cared and loved us, and she sacrificed so much for us. So I wanted to repay her that, and it allowed me to do the right things rather than the wrong.
It seemed like you, when you first came to the 49ers, you had a bit of a chip on your shoulder. You know, you were kind of brash. What did you kind of feel like that's how you had to prove yourself, or what do you think was the reason behind that?
You know, I just had to learn to control my emotions. I feel like, so once I got to the San Francisco 49ers, I wanted to be successful, and I wanted to be successful really, really bad. And I wasn't going to allow anything to step in my way of doing that, especially when it came to playing football. So, you know, I was tough. You know, I had to be tough, and I just had to learn how to control my emotions. And once I learned how to control my emotions, I was able to move forward and become a leader and do all the right things within the realm of the team. And just in life in general.
What did you have a role model, you know, growing up when you came to the 49ers about how you should act, you know, in those early days, how you should act as an athlete?
Yeah, you know, I'd say the main person was probably Coach Singletary. He was there for me. He allowed me to be able to look in the mirror, humble myself, and know that you know, I can't let my pride get in the way of things and just move forward and become that leader that I knew I wanted to become. But in order to do that, I had to humble myself. And he was there. He was a big influence in my life at that time.
Yeah. Well, how do you look back on that? You know, his first game after taking over for Mike Nolan in 2008, he kicked you off the sideline. He basically kicked you out of the game. That couldn't have been a really good feeling for that to happen. And how did you respond to that?
Yeah, when he kicked me off the field, we had had some a few situations where prior to that, we had some situations where we had to discuss discussion about some things, and there were some things that I needed to correct, and he would talk to me about that all the time. Frequently, it would come up.
Are you talking about attitude issues, that kind of thing?
Yeah, just getting better. Just because he would always tell me that I was talented. He's like, you're talented. You can be the best. You can be the best. Just you just have to go out and let your actions speak for itself instead of talking and doing all the things that you're doing. And once that came up, I guess that was that was it. That was it. That was the point. That was his breaking point. And he wanted me to know that he was serious. Hey, look, if we're going to do this, if you want to be the best, I'm going to be tough on you. It's tough love. There's nothing. We don't have to, it doesn't have to be personal. It's business. It's football. But I just want to see you be the best. And in order for you to be the best, I have to be tough on you. So I guess that was the moment right there that turned everything around. You know, once I saw that, I was like, wow, this guy's really serious. There's nothing I can do. I can't, this guy right here, I mean, he's just tough and I can't beat him. So I just have to straighten myself up. And, that's what I did. I straightened myself up and, you know, I did everything he asked me to do I became a different person.
You know, the I want winners, you know, that whole speech, the whole rant that he went on after the game. When did you first hear it? And do you still, you know, how often do you hear that, those words from Mike Singletary, whether it's, you know, on the internet or on TV or just in your own head?
It never leaves. It's always there. It's always there. It's always around. And, you know, it permeates throughout the years. I mean, it's just there. And, you know, I first heard it after that game. I went home and sat on the couch and I turned the TV on it. And there he was, Coach Singletary. I'd rather play with 10 guys than to play with someone to talk about himself. I will win it. Can't do it. I told Vernon, he better off going in and taking a shower.
You got it down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know it like the back of my hand. But, yeah, after that, I was sitting there. I was like, how could he do this? How could he do this? This is wrong. He's horrible. I can't believe he did this. I was so frustrated. I was livid. I just couldn't take it. I was like, man, this guy is horrible. Like, why he just throw me under the bus like that? That is awful.
But then, and I remember talking to you the week after that, and I was thinking, man, this is going to be something that haunts Vernon Davis the rest of his career. He'll always be known as the guy who, you know, the coach in his first game ordered off the field. But you aren't. You know, people don't. I don't know if people think of you in those terms. So what did you do to get out of that mold and make people remember those Singletary words? But I think only the people who were here really know that they were directed at you.
Yeah, I mean, everyone looks at it. I guess it's one of those things where you grow. It's growing pains. Where everyone has a past. Everyone, as a young guy, I mean, from day one, I mean, you have to grow. You have to. When you're young, you're going to be mischievous. You're going to be just one of those kids that you're going to be lost. I mean, you're lost as a kid until you find yourself. And I guess when everyone looks back, they're like, oh, he was just going through some things, and he was a young man, and he needed to grow up, and we understand that. And you just you transcend and you transform. You either transform and transcend for the good or for the bad. And for me, I feel like I transformed for the good. And I allowed myself to become a leader and just, you know, humble myself. And I just, throughout life, you learn so much and you take those things and you just allow them to manifest within you, and you just blossom into a good person.
Yeah, and you did blossom, obviously. And kind of the first great moment in after Jim Harbaugh came to the team was the playoff game against the Saints, and you and Alex Smith hooked up for Vernon Post. Mm-hmm. Take us through that play, and just as I recall, that play was installed very late in the week. So take us through that play and how much of a game changer that, you know, that was for you and Alex.
Well, yeah, that play, we worked on that play a few times in practice before that game. I remember I was on the jug machines right after that, and I dislocated my pinky, and I was like, wow, like, gosh, I hope I'm able to get in there and execute, because I was so worried about my pinky. I was like, oh, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? We have a game coming up in 2 days. So, you know, we got in the game, and you know, it was going well. It was going well. It was up and down. That game was like an emotional roller coaster because, I mean, playing the Saints, they came in there to beat us. But, you know, fortunately, we were able to hang in there and just keep fighting and keep pounding. And that play came up. There was a few seconds on the clock. Coach called the play. Vernon Post. I lined up, looked inside, looked outside, made sure I was on the ball, and snapped the play, ran up 10 to 12 yards. Put my foot down and slammed it inside. And there it was. The ball was right on me. Caught it. And next thing you know, we won the game. You know, it was like one of those, like a dream come true. As a kid, you always want to get that game winner. You know, you just can't wait. You want to do it. You want to do it over and over and over. And that's what it was. It was like that shot, you know, on the basketball court, the game-winning shot. And everyone came up to me, lifted me up, and just shouted, you did it. You did it. You're the man. And it was just one of those plays that just, you know, it seems as if it went down into history with the San Francisco 49ers, and they named it the Vernon Catch, Catch 3. So it's awesome to see that, and I'm honored. It's a privilege, and it's just it's great.
Yeah, one of the great 49ers playoff victories. And then, you know, the next year, things are rolling along. The switch is made at quarterback. Kaepernick plays very well. Mm-hmm. You go to the Super Bowl. You have another big game, but you fall a little bit short. Has there ever been any thought in your mind, you know, what could have happened, what would have happened had Jim Harbaugh remained with Alex Smith through that entire 2012 season?
You know what? I think about that sometimes, and I think about what if Alex would have stayed in the starting role. You know, what if he had that role, and would it have been a situation where we have won the Super Bowl? I don't know. That's just a question that will always linger. You know, everyone wants to know. What if? Yeah, you know, but it's one of those things. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's what's written is written, and you know, Kaepernick had a shot, and you know, he did really well. He did well. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong. It was just the game just didn't go in our favor. We didn't win it, and there's always going to be what if.
Yeah, I want to ask you about both of those guys. First, Alex, you just faced him, on the other sideline, of course, with the Kansas City Chiefs. Is it amazing to you that he is playing the best football of his career at this stage in his career?
No. I mean, Alex is a hard worker, man. He's hard worker. He's always been dedicated to the game, and overzealous when it comes to football. He's tremendous. He's not only a great football player, he's a great person. He's always been like that, and he just works. And I feel like if you work hard, you put the time in, the harder you work, good things will happen for you. You just have to stay grounded, stay that great person, and you know, away from the field and as well as on the field. Just keep working, and it'll happen for you. So I'm not surprised at all. I mean, I know Alex, and I know how much football means to him.
And then your final year with the 49ers, you know, things weren't going well, obviously. What kind of rapport did you have with Colin Kaepernick during that time?
Kaepernick was always he was another hard worker. He just wanted to play. He wanted to win. He was he just wanted to be everything that the team asked for, and he did that. I mean, he was a great person. I didn't have any complaints about him. Of course, there's always ups and downs within a team, but Kaepernick was always a great guy, great teammate. Never really had any problems out of him.
And then, I mean, this whole movement now around the NFL traces back to him. Does that surprise you? I mean, you knew him as a rookie. You knew him all along. Is it kind of surprising that that he took the social stances that has really, you know, taken the, you know, been the talk of not only the NFL world, but all of America over the past year plus?
Yeah, I mean, it surprised me when he first did it. I mean, it was like, wow. I mean, I didn't know. I didn't expect that. But I mean, I understand what he's trying to stand for and what he's doing. And, you know, as he went with his heart, and, you know, he followed his heart, and he wanted to bring some awareness to something that was going on within the United States of America. And he did it. He went with his heart. So, I mean, that's just something that he wanted to do, and he did it.
Yeah. So then you move on to the Broncos, and then you actually win a Super Bowl right here at Levi's Stadium. That had to be kind of surreal for you.
That was surreal. That was amazing. Really, really amazing. But I told myself, I said that I'm leaving. There has to be a reason that I'm leaving. There's something in it. I don't know what it is, but there's something. Or something. What's meant for you is meant for you. And, you know, it happened at the right time. And, you know, at first I didn't really understand it. But now that I look back on my life and I look back on my career, I understand why the pieces move the way they move.
And I understand after that game, after you win the Super Bowl, you went into the 49ers PR office, which was right next to your locker room, and did some catching up and, you know, shared some stories and caught up with some of your old friends like Mike Jasanoff and Bob Lang and Dan Beckler.
Yes, I did. I did. I wanted to see those guys, and you know, we chatted and caught up a little bit, and it was great. It was great. It was great to see them and be back in Levi's Stadium. But it was bittersweet. It was bittersweet for me because I spent my entire career there as a 49er, and to be able to leave and come back on another team is just, it was like, whoa, this is weird, but hey, just won a Super Bowl, so hey, there's a lot to be thankful for.
Yeah. And now you're obviously back in your hometown. You ran like that kid we saw so many years ago at the Combine the other night when I saw you catch a 69-yard pass against the Chiefs. You moved into number 10 overall in NFL history among tight ends for receiving yards. And now you face the 49ers coming up on Sunday. So do you have time to reflect? Do you ever think about just your journey and where it's gone and where you've been to get to this point?
Yeah, I think about it all the time. I think about how much work how much work it takes, and how much work it took to get to where I am. Man, it's just years. I mean, year after year. I mean, training camp. And just staying out, being the last one on the field, and first one in the building in the morning, and just working so hard. Sometimes we take it for granted that when we're young, we just say, hey, we're just doing it. It's just out here. It's just what it is. But now that I look back, I'm in year 12, and I look back, I'm like, wow, that was actually a lot of work. And it's still a lot of work. You know, I'm very, very thankful. And, like I said, I'm humbled to just sit here and just be proud of how much work that I put in and the work that I'm continuing to put in, to be the best and to help my team win. It's amazing to reflect on that and just see how far I've come. And, I'm very, very grateful for the opportunity that the San Francisco 49ers gave me to be where I am. Because without the 49ers, I wouldn't be where I'm at. You know, without the situation with Singletary, I wouldn't be where I'm at. So I'm very, very thankful for those opportunities and the situations I've been in.
Verna, I got to admit, I'm going to come clean here. When you were in your final couple years, a year with the 49ers, I didn't think that you had the passion anymore because, and this is my fault because I looked at a guy who had so much stuff going on off the field, the art galleries, Jamba Juice, you're co-owner of an interior design company. I mean, you had so much stuff going on off the field that I thought, well, you can't. That's a very tough balancing act, but you're able to do it. Tell me about how your off the field endeavors. I mean, that you're just as passionate about that as you are about football. Is that part of your upbringing that you're kind of stepping outside the mold as far as the stereotypical football player?
Yeah, you know what? For me, like when I first walked into the league, I didn't have anything going on, right? I had a few endorsements here and there, but I've gotten so many calls over the years of different players asking for money, and it scared me. It was so much for me to handle. I just started freaking out. I'm like, my goodness. I was losing money. I was in a few Ponzi's, and I was afraid. So I sat down one day. I said, look, I have to figure things out. I have to really set myself up and just get my mind geared the same way, most the people who own 90% of everything, the same way their mind works. I have to get my mind working that way while I'm playing football. So I did that. I started seeking business opportunities. I started thinking outside the box where, partnership I had with Crave Jerky, that was an endorsement deal, but I also had equity in that company before they sold to Hershey's. So I was just, I was just thinking about different ways I could leverage, this opportunity in this club with this platform. And I guess once I did that, I started doing a lot of things, and I guess people started looking at it like, hey, he has so much going on, blah, blah, blah. He's not into it. He's not passionate. But that really wasn't the case. I think the case was that the team wasn't doing well, so I wasn't doing well. My numbers went down, so people started to say, oh, he's declining, this and that. But, at the end of the day, it didn't bother me one bit. I know what comes with it, but I couldn't put my teammates down. I had to stay in it. I had to hang in there with them. And I knew for a simple fact that I was going to bounce back and everything was going to work in my favor, but I just had to keep working. And that's just life. You know, I've been down this route before. You know, there's been many situations where, you know, I wasn't always on top. You know, there's going to be moments when you're on top and you're at the bottom, and, you know, it's a humbling experience for you. You know, it was humbling. It's very, very humbling, I must say. And I'm thankful. I'm thankful for it.
And can you tell me, Vernon Davis Foundation for the Arts, that's an organization you've started. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Vernon Davis Foundation for the Arts, created to promote art education and art appreciation amongst youth from disadvantaged backgrounds. I plan to fulfill my mission by giving art scholarships to dedicated students and grants to deserving art programs. I envision cities where art can be vital to social development. There won't be any more peer pressure and criticism to worry about. These kids can go on and live their lives and do everything that they feel they want to do that's within their heart. And that's why I created it.
It was, did you kind of feel peer pressure at the beginning to, like, well, you know, what are you doing with the arts? You're a football player.
No, not at all. I mean, I've always been, that's another reason why I started, because of that. I mean, as a kid growing up in Washington, D.C., I was afraid to pursue the arts. And I didn't feel that life should be that way. I feel like there should be a lot of diversity. People should be able to do whatever they want, especially kids growing up. Because, I mean, if you think about it, art is everything. Art is everything. We look at actors on TV. We look at movies. That's art. And for me to not be able to pursue that in high school, I mean, it's very, very unfortunate. And it shouldn't be like that. I wanted to change the way people look at artists, view artists. Growing, especially in the inner cities. I mean, a lot of that takes place in the inner cities, because in order to be cool, you have to have the new pair of Jordans, or you have to play basketball or football. But if you're walking around with an easel and a paintbrush, then it's not cool. And a lot of kids, they want to be cool, but they can't because they worry about what people are going to say about them. So we have to change that.
No, that's great. Vernon, you've done some great things on the field, off the field. You looking forward to seeing any of your former teammates on Sunday?
Yeah, I can't wait to see those guys and give them big hugs, man. Pat them on the back. And the few that's there, you know, there's quite a few that I played with. Yeah, there's quite a few guys there. But I can't wait to see them and see some of the guys from the upper management. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. I look forward to it.
Hey, Vernon, thank you so much for joining me on the 49ers Insider Podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, that was Vernon Davis, the former 49ers tight end, now playing for Washington, and he'll be facing his former teammates on Sunday in his hometown. And now we switch over to Jeff Garcia. Jeff Garcia, the analyst on NBC Sports Bay Area's 49er coverage. And Jeff, coming off another heartbreaking loss for the 49ers, another overtime defeat against the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday. It's almost like it's Groundhog Day. Doesn't it kind of seem like 49ers are just playing the same game week after week after week?
Right. It does seem like that. And it's unfortunate because they've been so close, but obviously close doesn't count in the National Football League or generally in sports at all. So to look at these last four games and to know that they've suffered losses by a point differential of 11 total points, I believe it is, has got to be frustrating for the team. It's got to be disappointing, especially considering the fact that they knew going in that it was going to be an uphill battle, that they were a young team, a lot of fresh new faces, an evolving changing of the guard at the head coach, at the GM, and to be as competitive as they've been in four of the five games, I think in ways surprises people, but in a lot of other ways, they're going to be kicking themselves because they had a great opportunity to win football games and could easily be 4-1 as opposed to 0-5. And I think that's the frustrating, disappointing part of it all, is that this NFL game is, the margin of error is so small, so minuscule. Any sort of mistake, whether it's mental or physical, is a difference maker. And I think this young team is learning that due to maybe their own self-discipline or their own self-inflicting wounds, they've lost football games that they could have easily have won. They've competed hard. You got to give them credit in that way. And guys have had to step in and step up. I mean, you talk about changing bodies, going through injuries, going through new faces. They're experiencing it all in the first 5 weeks of the season. And as much as their record is disappointing, I think you have to look at the silver lining right now is the fact that they have been competitive. And yes, it's somewhat been the same story week in and week out. The offense just doesn't get going soon enough. The defense hangs in there. It's a bend but don't break. Then all of a sudden the offense finds a way to get some points on the board and to create excitement and make it close, and then they just suffer the consequences at the end. So hopefully this trend will find an end in sight soon. They have another difficult one coming up this week in Washington, though.
So I went to Twitter, asked some people for some questions for you. One of them came from Niner Faithful, and Niner Faithful asked, and this kind of goes back to when you were playing, kind of a rough 1999 season, the 2000 season, you guys were 6-10, and then in 2001, 12-4, and you guys make the playoffs. So his question is, and I think he's trying to draw some parallels of when we could see some signs about this current 49er team turning the corner. He asks of you, Jeff, at what point did you feel the team that you were on made that turn to be a playoff team? Could you feel it kind of building through the kind of the rough times and into the 2001 season?
Yeah, I think really looking at myself and how I matured and grew into the role as the starting quarterback for the 49ers in that first year, obviously we suffered a lot of growing pains. And I think there was a recognition that the team was changing. It had gotten old. It needed to freshen up once again. They started to do that through draft picks and free agency. But in 99, I mean, the wheels were falling off. And I happened to be the guy trying to steer the bus. And my first five starts, I talked about it, and it was written in an article about how those were a struggle and got to a real low point against Pittsburgh. And it took a benching and a realization or a recognition, a realization that, hey, it's more than just the quarterback. And to take that pressure off of my shoulders and to alleviate that in some sort of way and get back to having fun and playing the game. And as much as we didn't win much more after that time, that season, I believe we were 4-12. There was a change in how we were playing the game in the last five games of that season. We were much more competitive. Offensively, we were much more productive. That led into a very productive 2000 season where, unfortunately, we were 6-10, but we were a young team, and we were putting points on the board. We were moving the ball offensively, and it was just a matter of coming together and growing through that time and maturing to where the next year we come out and we're 12-4 and easily could have been a 14-2 team. We lost some close ones that year, and we were right there with the Rams battling for the division title and becoming a better team every single week. And so you look at that situation, you look at how things really turned around with Steve Mariucci and through the draft and a sense of, hey, we have to turn over this team. It's not the same team that it was through the 80s and 90s. Some of those faces have gotten old, and they need to be replaced with some youth and some new bodies. And once we kind of got through that and we had that new team, we were a much more competitive, much better team. And maybe this is something that this current team is going to experience and realize that, hey, as much as we're going through some bodies right now and there are some new faces and some changes being made, we're riding games. We are right there. We are close to winning football games. And we just need to personally focus on what our role is, what our own individual obligation is to this team, and really solidify that. You look at yesterday's game, you look at a couple of the big runs that Mac had from the Colts late in that game, and it was really just assignment and alignment and where personnel needed to be and mental mistakes that were made on plays like that that created big opportunities or big runs for Mac. Same thing on offense, the self-inflicting wounds at times that just hurt themselves. You're talking about mental errors such as penalties, third down inefficiencies, red zone inefficiency. All those things contribute to the fact that they're not winning these games right now.
I guess the big difference, though, is that by the end of the 99 season, when you came back and you had the big game at Cincinnati and heading into 2000 and 2001, there was no question about who the starting quarterback was and where the future was going at that position. The problem with the 49ers now is, I think it's apparent to everybody, that Brian Hoyer is a placeholder and the guy who's going to be the quarterback whenever this team is able to turn the corner probably isn't on the roster right now. You know, assuming it's not C.J. Beathard, he's either on another NFL team or he's playing college football. So that's got to make it a little more complicated for what the 49ers are going through right now.
It definitely is, and it's unfortunate because there are times when Brian shows signs that he can be the guy, but that's the problem with this position. If you don't have consistency on a – and it's not a game-by-game basis. It's a series-by-series audition that you're going through. And if you can't show that consistency through an entire game and then take that game into another game and a week-to-week performance, you're going to be looked at as a temporary, just a stopgap. And right now, that's what he's looked at as, and this is his opportunity to prove people wrong, to show people that he belongs, but not enough is being done. And it's not all upon him. I mean, you have to look at other situations throughout the game. Hey, their running game has been hot and cold. The offensive line is still coming together. He's had a number of drop balls in critical situations. But it all starts with him. And so he's got to be the leader. He's got to have the mindset. He's got to be the grinder to battle them through this difficult time.
Yeah, so let me ask you this, Jeff. Now, he started off, it wasn't pretty, starting off the game. And then in the fourth quarter, with about 8 minutes left, when they fell behind by 14 points, I mean, the numbers he racked up were pretty much all in that eight-minute spurt there. So is it... How do you look at that? I mean, is he building? Did he build momentum, or is he still kind of on, you know, thin ice as far as that position and what the 49ers should be looking at?
I think he's always going to be on thin ice until they start winning games. I mean, because it is always going to come back upon the quarterback's shoulders. You know, the start of the game was actually really positive. They had a great first drive that unfortunately ends in a dropped ball. It would have been a great catch by Kittle, but a dropped ball in the end zone that could have led to a touchdown instead of settling for 3 points. But then it went stagnant for that rest of the first quarter, which pretty much ended after that drive. And then the second quarter, there was no offense whatsoever. And adjustments were made on the defensive side for Indianapolis, taking away the short passing game, the slants, the quick outs. And that's where the 49ers didn't adjust very well, didn't make the throws or the catches they needed to do to make in order to, hey, move the chains, to get first downs, to be positive. Third quarter, same thing. They took a couple shots down the field, which was good to see. They stretched the defense out a little bit, but weren't able to hit on one of those shots until late in the fourth quarter when Marquise Goodwin came up with a big catch. So, you know, those type of things have been too evident, too existent throughout these first five games of the season, where the offense just doesn't produce, doesn't maintain any sort of consistency, can't move the chains on third down. I mean, you look at week in and week out, their third down efficiency is 30% or less, if that, and it's just not good enough to win in the National Football League.
So when the 49ers play Washington on Sunday, Should fans be watching the quarterback on the other team and thinking about what it could be like in 2018 if Kirk Cousins were to somehow, whether free agency or, well, it'd have to be through free agency because, you know, Washington has the option of franchising him for a third year in a row at something like $34 million for 1 year, or they could sign him to a long-term contract extension. But do you think that that's a legitimate option, that Kirk Cousins could be with the 49ers next year?
Well, it sounds like it could be a legitimate option. And yes, I think 49er fans are already looking at what he's doing on a weekly basis and seeing how he's performing because of the talk that's been out there about the possibility of he rejoining his ex-coach in Shanahan. But as far as the reality is concerned, I mean, we have to focus on what we have right now. And Brian and C.J. Beathard are the quarterbacks of this team. And whether C.J. Beathard starts to get some snaps at some point, and I'm not saying he takes over the role as a starting quarterback, but we've discussed it. Hey, start giving him some snaps in practice. Start giving him a series in a game. See what he can do as a player and how he matures through the process. And also put that pressure on Brian that, hey, you need to play better, man. This is just not your position to hold down for a temporary time. This is your opportunity to earn a spot on this team and to be a leader of this team and show that you're capable of leading this team to wins and make it happen. And I think that's one of the things that, to me, I don't want to say bothers me about how he plays the game, but I think at times he looks too relaxed. And I think there needs to be more urgency within him from a decision-making process and just from a competitiveness as to how he plays the game. He's more athletic than he shows. He's more capable of extending plays than he has showed so far. You look at the other side with the young quarterback yesterday and Brissett, he made some big time throws and plays outside the pocket. And I don't think he's any more mobile than Brian Hoyer. You look at Kirk Cousins on Monday night, how he took off with the football and made plays late in that game against Kansas City, how he moved the chains, how he gave up his body. Those type of things from a guy who has not been looked at as a full-time starter, who's been a journeyman in the National Football League, better start to happen. You're not just a pocket passer because you're not good enough just to stay in the pocket and make decisions. You need to make other decisions that help your team or at least show your team that you're willing to do whatever it takes to win football games.
Yeah, one final thing for you, Jeff. Joseph Polisena Jr. asked about the running game, and we saw on Sunday how Matt Breida ended up playing more of the game than Carlos Hyde, and Carlos Hyde said it wasn't because of the hip, and Kyle Shanahan said it wasn't because of the hip. He said it was because they were going with the hot hand. So Joseph asked, is Matt Breida a better fit for this offense than Carlos Hyde?
I don't necessarily know that answer. I mean, Breida has performed well when given the opportunity, and gosh, he's like a shoestring tackle away from breaking some big plays. I mean, you look at some of the runs and catches that he's made, and he is just a half step away from turning those 10 to 12 yard runs and catches into big time plays. But, you know, Carlos Hyde has showed some exceptional things as well. And again, it comes back to consistency and also physical toughness. And I think that's one of the questions that we have right now on Carlos Hyde is how tough is he? How willing is he? When things are going tough against him, when things aren't going his way, how does he battle through it? Does he step up his game, or does what happened yesterday take place where somebody else gets put into the game and there's a spark, there's a fire that's all of a sudden lit into the team, and things start to happen, and you see Carlos Hyde on the sideline like he's somewhat bored and not into it? And as a player, as a competitor, better light a fire under his tail and figure out how he can be more productive and be that guy that's not just being taken out of the game in certain situations because they need a change up or they need a spark. He needs to be that spark. That's what they paid him to do. That's what they drafted him to do. And yeah, if he's not going to be that guy, then unfortunately they're going to look for somebody else to step in and do that. And that's the thing about the Denver or Shanahan style of offense from the past. They've had productive runners who you've never heard of because they learn to run within the system. And they've been productive because of how that offense is generated, how it's called, how it's blocked, the schemes, and they understand how to attack the line of scrimmage. And maybe Breida right now is just getting it more than Carlos Hyde is.
Yeah, I mean, that's a position with Carlos Hyde, who's final year of his contract. You would think with that history, they're not going to be paying big money to keep him. And they did draft Joe Williams in the fourth round. He's on IR, so basically a redshirt year for him and Matt Breida. And they can always grab somebody in the draft next year in the fourth or fifth round to step in there and compete as well.
That's right. I mean, hey, they talk about it all the time. It's NFL, not for long. It's next man up. And so especially the running back position, as expendable as it looks throughout the National Football League, you get to a certain age now in the National Football League of the running back position, you're too old. And it's not to say that that's the situation with Carlos Hyde, but if he's not producing, hey, there's going to be somebody else that's right at his that's chomping at his ankles, at his tail, ready to step in and show that they can be the guy. And right now, hey, that young Breida, whenever he steps on the field, you see some electrifying things happening out of him.
Yeah, well, the 49ers do need a lot of more electrifying things happening as they go to Washington on Sunday. It's still looking for the first win of the Kyle Shanahan era. And one of these days, Jeff, we'll be talking about that first victory for Kyle Shanahan. I don't know if it's going to be this week, but we will be talking every week on the 49ers Insider Podcast, and it's been my pleasure once again.
Well, thanks, Matt, and I hope we get to talk about it soon, man, because this gets old real quick.
All right, Jeff. Okay, I'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
Okay,
all right, man. Bye.
The 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com.